It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here in Hawaii. Just absolutely beautiful and hot. So if you want to know what it is to go to the beach, this is the day to go. Or fishing. The ahi seem to be doing pretty good out there with the swarms of the billions of termites. So all of you with wooden legs or fake legs, you know, whatever you got there, stay in. Be careful. Anyway, today we're going to have hopefully a really good conversation with Dr. Hector Valenzuela, and you've known him to be on the show a couple of times, talking about GMO and bees and organic crops and what have you, and he's a professor at UH. And there's some things that he's sharing with us, you the listener and myself and many of you out there. Seems he's raising some concerns and alleging some harassment on the part of, would you believe it, the University of Hawaii, the CTAR, and that is the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, or CTAR. Anyway, I read quite a bit of this in speaking with him, and I saw the piece on KGMB of Hawaii News Now, and it saddens my heart that an educational institution would lend itself to this and some of the things, and hopefully he will share in greater details, and I don't want to steal the thunder or steal the points, but feel free to call in 524-1080 later on, and you can pick this up at carolcox.com or kwai1080am.com, and you can listen live, or we'll have it podcast. It's going to be a little delayed on the podcast in the next couple of days, but we'll get to you. But enjoy and sit back, and if you, again, have any questions, 524-1080. But let us get going first before you call in and ask any questions, because we can't read your brain. Good morning, Dr. Valenzuela.
Good morning. Thanks for hiring me again.
How are you?
Good, good.
What's going on with this situation? And give us a little bit of background about yourself and what's happening. And you've been at UH for some while in the 90s, right?
Yeah, since I've been at UH for about 24 years, and this case is a little historical in nature. In the 90s, I started to question the direction of the state and the college in terms of promoting crop biotechnology. I felt that there was a lot of questions about it. Parallel, I was trying to promote ecological agriculture in the state to better take care of the health and to improve the returns by farmers, because they were spending too much money on chemical agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So on the bigger perspective, I somewhat ran in trouble for being asking this type of questions about crop biotechnology, and I found what was resistance from administration in terms of the educational activities that I was trying to promote. And if you like, I can give you a general background about my jobs to give you a perspective in terms of why I was...
Yeah, please do, if you would.
My position at UH is a extension specialist for vegetable crops. So my job is to develop educational activities throughout the state and select programmatic activities that are relative to agriculture in the state. When I started at UH, my position had been vacant for about 10 years, so I pretty much started with a blank slate. I could have chosen many areas of research to look at. For example, I could have chosen, I'm going to start working on developing genetically modified crops. I'm going to develop a GMO tomato, and I'm sure that administration would have been happy and wouldn't have said, no, that's the wrong thing to do. My choice from the beginning was to look at alternative ways of farming that would minimize negative impacts on the environment. And I realized that a lot of our farmers were also spending a lot of money just purchasing inputs from out of state, more fertilizers and chemicals, and just looking around the environment, I said, that's really not necessary. We have the ingenuity, we have the knowledge, we have traditional knowledge from hundreds of years in Hawaii of how to grow things without having to rely on these products. So this is how I got involved in ecological farming. And at the same time, when I heard all the big noise about the future of agriculture is GMOs and Hawaii is going to be developing all kinds of GMO varieties, I started to question it. And again, this is when I started to find resistance from administration. So this is somewhat of historical in nature. A lot of the in and out and the humbug going with administration, the friction was more through the 2000s. There still remain some remnants of that restriction of academic freedom, and this is why the dialogue continues.
Mm-hmm. Now, I recall my college days, and my professors were they were hands-on, and I remember several that would do exactly the same thing you do. They talk about organics, they talk about raising foods without chemicals and what have you. They were applauded, and they were encouraged. But in reading some of the things that you're alleging and some of the things that have been documented, and I'm taken aback by that this is the University of Hawaii, and this isn't a day to strike out at the University of Hawaii, but we will talk specifically about their actions in that, as you've alleged. It's something doesn't ring well with this, because they should be encouraging that, especially in this era, safe eating, good, healthy foods, and people going organic or what have you, changing their diets about medical issues and trying to be healthy. And some of the things that I see that's the leaders at CTAR, I'm appalled.
So, because in the 1990s, the plantations were starting to close down, there was a lot of dialogue and debate about what is the future of agriculture in Hawaii. And because farmers are having such a challenging time, such a difficult time, so many pests, so many diseases and so on, we're actually being asked to think outside the box, that let's think of something different, let's look for solutions, let's work with other disciplines, interdisciplinary work, to come up with real solutions for the farm. So we really need to have an open discussion and consider all options out there and say what's the best dialogue, what's the best options for Hawaii. So I thought that I was just providing just another angle to the discussion, and which is let's go back to taking care of the land, taking care of the soil for future generations. But from my thinking, this somewhat challenged the big perspective that the college had at the time, that Governor Cayetano had at the time, which is Hawaii is going to be the GMO state in the world. We're going to be the GMO Silicon Valley.
Right. And I recall that, him boasting about that. Well, many promises. But I guess he didn't anticipate the interference. And it suggests some of the articles that I have read, and for read as Cascadia Times, for example, written by Paul Robertson, Koberstein, and Eliza Murphy. And in Pesticides Concerns, they wrote an article May 20th, 2015. And in there, and many other things that have been written and that you published, simply, it's shocking that you've had interference. You were isolated. You talk about some instances of bigotry, you believe, and what have you. Can you share with us some of the specifics? And you were ostracized, which is typical of the machine when it wishes to do you in. They start to attack your character, first of all. Then they come up with silly rules, and it's all left within their hands to evaluate it. So it's those that are doing the injustice to you get to evaluate or assess your complaint and render an opinion. It's like going to the hangman's noose and saying, basically, I want to see how to design my noose.
Right. So just to clarify, the university is considered to be a third party, an independent third party that can take an unbiased perspective about a debate about several issues. So this investigative report conducted by Paul Koberstein and Lisa Murphy, they wanted to look at the relationship between the university and the city industry in the state. because over the past 15 years, UH has been seen as more like a cheerleader and testimony in the legislature and so on. Like, yeah, this is the way to go. Everything's fine. So as a perspective, this was an investigative journalism to look at the relationship UH and the city industry. And as they did this research, they found about the difficulties that I've had. One of the first encounters that I had, so I went through a promotion process and everything was fine. 1995, I got promoted to tenure.
You got tenure.
In 2000, I became a full professor. And 2005, I went through a post-tenure review, which is a normal, and it's not supposed to be punitive. It's not supposed it's supposed to be a constructive process.
Right.
And at that meeting, I was told by my department chair, what is all this thing that you're doing about biotechnology? Biotechnology is not part of your duties and responsibilities. And the whole, it was a whole hostile, like a two-hour meeting. It was very hostile, and in which he said, all of the research that you have been conducted, which is applied research in organics, it doesn't count. It doesn't count towards your promotion. So it was like a very negative, and that was the first head-to-head friction that I had in which they were telling me directly, crop biotechnology is not part of your responsibilities, which is frivolous, because at the time, the university had several projects to develop genetically modified vegetable crops, tomatoes, lettuce, cabbages. So, of course, as a specialist, I had to stay abreast of this and to say, is this a good idea or not? A central part of my research is to look at varieties, crop varieties, to look at 20 tomato varieties and say, which is the best variety?
Right.
So one GMO variety would be one of the ones that I would evaluate. So it was preposterous for the department chair to say, you're not supposed to be looking at this. And furthermore, he was saying, you're not supposed to interact with clients that had questions about crop biotechnology.
And these clients would be the general public or farmers?
Correct. So, for example, the papaya farmers, the organic papaya farmers on the Big Island, the organic coffee growers on the Big Island, they were approaching me and said, we're concerned about this big program because what happens if you contaminate my crop? You will be ruining my enterprise. So I was interacting with farmers, starting to interact with consumer groups, and my department chair told me, you're allowed to do this on your private time, on the weekends or in the evenings, but as part of your function as a university professor, you're not allowed to interact with these clients. And I thought, this is discriminatory. At the university, we should be unbiased, and it's illegal to be to discriminate based on race, gender, or
culture, accent,
or beliefs.
Ethnicity. Now, when they presented that to you in that fashion, did they offer you alternative? What would you, you're being evaluated, what were you going to, they going to rely on? Because you've spent this time doing what you've done, and they say, well, wipe the slate clean with that. That can't be used. It's irrelevant. What did they offer, or what did they decide that they would use to evaluate you or to give you that assessment, to complete that assessment?
So our normal activities as extension specialists, our outputs, in the end, is informal outreach to the community, to the public. So they would evaluate, for example, how many educational publications you published, how many presentations you gave, how many workshops, how many applied research projects you had to help the farming community. So this is basically what I was presenting, except that the topic was the wrong topic. It was something that I was questioning the conventional wisdom of the university, of the direction that we were following. For example, we were promoting, like, cheerleaders, GMO papaya. And I was asking, where are the studies showing that there's no environmental harm, that there's no health harm?
So you're asking the questions that should have been asked, and when you asked those questions, you were being punished or ostracized or iced out, so to speak.
Correct. And I was asking questions of contamination. I was saying, what if you contaminate organic farms? What's going to be the, who's going to be liable? Are you going to be liable for it?
So you're asking questions about migration of the pollen, migration of the sprays, migration, or in it, the application of it, and how it would drift.
Correct.
But they didn't want to hear that.
Correct. But interestingly, a lot of the concerns that I was raising 15, 20 years ago, today they have become truth, right? Today contamination is extensive throughout the GMO farming. Resistance to herbicides has become an epidemic. resistant superbugs have become an epidemic. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the early concerns that I raised are becoming to be a reality, and we're getting more hard evidence about the health and environmental impacts of this technology. So they were trying me to not to discuss issues that were actually factual or that later on would become a real problem.
This is my take on it after reading many of things about you and having had you on the show before. I'm very suspect of the university in its head, because you said earlier they are third party. So the university, and what is the other third party, the other parties that are involved in this issue?
You have the consumers. Mm-hmm. You have the industry that is trying to promote this this product, and you have independent scientists that are supposed to be unbiased and to look at both sides. Mm-hmm. When you see a close relationship between the industry and the university, then you question whether they are independent. Mm-hmm. And we brought this issue with former Chancellor Tom Apple. What if the medical school had close ties with the tobacco industry? And obviously, this wouldn't be an independent third party. Mm-hmm. So we're saying if a similar relationship exists between the pesticide industry and the university, the College of Ag, then it becomes a clear conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. When I raised this issue in an editorial a couple of years ago, I was responded almost immediately by an associate dean of research saying, this is an assassination of character, mm-hmm. as if a conflict of interest is something that faculty in Hawaii don't suffer. Everybody can suffer it, but not in Hawaii.
Well, and looking at all of this, one of the takeaways that I took was that it appeared that they were trying to channel you or your work, or get you, brush you off, so that they could entertain other activities like the industry, Monsanto, Synagro, and or whomever they were dealing with. And that reminded me, while reading these things, I remember the papaya itself at Waimanalo, where it was being developed and followed, and I always had questions about that. It left me with the impression that this was something, a study done independently by the University of Hawaii. Well, I've learned later it wasn't an independent study. Secondly, it was people, individuals stand to profit from the use of the state lands and the state efforts. But I was taken aback when I learned now that during this time, you were being told to go to your corner and close the door behind you and never speak another word because we have a relationship. That should never have happened, in my opinion, in my observations, where the university is supposed to be completely objective, completely balancing all things, incorporating all aspects of it. But they didn't in this case. But go on and share with us some of the other things that you experienced.
So just to follow on the papaya, the papaya was used almost like as a poster child by the GMO industry. It was an edible crop. It was developed at Hawaii, and it can be used as a poster child throughout the world to get governments to accept genetically modified crops. Mm-hmm. So the companies didn't charge for the patents that were used as part of the GMO papaya, so it could have been as an association between UH and industry to allow this crop to continue. At first I was told directly, okay, this is not part of your responsibility. Mm-hmm. And as time came up, I became more outspoken and continued to interact with the public, and I started to encounter a climate of hostility. Mm-hmm. In the college. Every time that I made an announcement about a seminar or a presentation about GMOs, I was responded by a battery of emails questioning it. And there's always announcements all the time, but you never see any responses to it.
Right.
Every time that I sent an announcement to the college, I was responded with almost uncollegial emails attacking, why are you doing this? Like the future of food, for instance, mm-hmm. Food Inc. and similar presentations or movies. And I continue to experience an increasingly hostile environment.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, I was invited to Maui to as a panel, as a follow-up to a movie on crop biotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
When the county administrator from Maui County learned that I was going to come to Maui to give a talk, he said, if Hector Valenzuela comes to Maui to give this presentation, he will no longer be allowed to use any UH facilities in Maui County to conduct his work. Over the past previous 5 to 10 years, I had conducted a lot of research in Maui. I had brought in about $60,000 to $100,000 to conduct work with onions, with other crops, to help farmers in Maui. But this administrator was saying, you will no longer be allowed to come to Maui and interact with our faculty and with the research facilities. So to me, again, this was a direct attack on my academic freedom, ability to conduct this research.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I mentioned earlier, in 1993, I began the first long-term organic research project in the Pacific region. I started plots in Waimanalo, and I said, I want to keep these plots for 20, 30 years, 40 years, indefinitely, so that I can come back with graduate students and evaluate how effective was my program to grow crops without relying on chemicals. How is the soil, the microorganisms, all kinds of different studies. In 1999, the college came and took those plots away from my program. And they didn't give me a written explanation. They didn't explain why are we taking away your plots. And again, I saw it as an attack on my academic freedom, which I was trying to promote a different form of agriculture. And of course, the previous year, UH had just released the Yuma papaya, so it was again challenging their vision about the future of agriculture in the state.
Now, during this time, what was your status with the university when they removed you or took away the privilege? I wouldn't even call it a privilege. It was part of a program that was sanctioned earlier by the university. It was the university's interest. And they then just severed that, stopped that immediately. What was your status? Were you tenured then, or were you still working to?
So this was in 1999. The following year, I went through promotion, and I became a full professor. So all my papers went well. Everything was okay. The problem is that they pretty much cut my research on the knees. As a faculty member, you have a laboratory, you have research. It's like you having a chemical laboratory, and they coming up and taking that lab away from you. So I was entering the most productive phase of my career, and they cut my research program on the knees. I started from zero. So it made it very difficult for me to say, where am I going to go now? Because now I don't have any fields where I can go and study the nematode levels, the organic matter levels, because they just took it away.
Doctor, we're talking about professional, educated people in an institution that's supposed to be above this kind of fray. You're suggesting that they lent themselves to this? This is... You hear these things and just on streetwalkers. This is below the university behavior. This is
so nationally at the time, sustainable agriculture was becoming very popular, and some of my colleagues in the mainland were starting to develop their own organic projects. And like you're saying, they were lauded. This is fantastic. This is great. This is real popular with students, with the community. So they were being lauded for developing such programs. So it was very difficult for me professionally to adapt and say, where am I going from now? So 5 years later, when I go through a post-tenure review, I had to adapt my research project, but then the administration can come and say, what have you been doing? Without saying, well, we took your research project and now it made it difficult for you to continue this line of work.
And you can't go to Maui, but other islands too, you were... exiled or basically prohibited from traveling to those and use of university properties, correct?
So the university was trying to have it both ways because on one hand they were using me as a resource, asking questions about crop biotechnology.
Right.
So in 2005 they had a one-day forum on biotechnology and the university invited me to give the opposing view. So I was the only professor who talked about risks, and there was about 8 to 12 professors talking about all the pros and benefits, the great things about biotechnology. So similarly, colleagues in other schools and community colleges and in UH, Manoa, were inviting me to give guest lectures to students. So for many years, I was going to Kauai to give guest lectures to the Kauai Community College, and my department chair told me, you have to take vacation for giving these lectures. That's not part of your responsibilities. And when I gave my dossier, post-tenure dossier, saying I gave all these lectures to students, my chair said, this don't count. This doesn't count as part of your responsibilities. So the message that I was getting, once again, was, as part of your job, you're not allowed to interact with people or to ask questions about the risk of crop biotechnology. So in a way, I was banned from going to neighbor islands to speak about these issues.
I'm sure the listeners out there are saying, well, okay, these are allegations, but show us the proof. And the proof is, I would ask this question, and I think that I know half of the answer. Was there financial gain on some of the professors or the schools, or did the professors that oversaw you or had influence on your tenure and your status, were they in a relationship with Monsanto, Dow, or any of those individual companies doing research at the time?
So I believe it was more about ideology. Mm-hmm. So on the big picture, UH really doesn't receive a lot of money from the industry. Mm-hmm. And individual professors, I don't think they receive a lot of monies from industry.
But they were receiving some.
They receive some. They receive federal funding for research and so on, which is some good money. Mm-hmm. But they have the ideology. For example, my department chair, his mentor was from UC Berkeley, and his mentor was like a right-wing ideologue who believed that we shouldn't be concerned about synthetic pesticides, about the health risks, mm-hmm. that we should be concerned about the health risk of natural chemicals found in plants, like tomatoes or celery and so on. So there has no basis on science, but there are ideologues that push these. We shouldn't be regulating the EPA. We shouldn't be regulating chemicals. We should be more worried about natural chemicals in food. And if you say that today, you're going to be laughed out of the room, right?
Right.
But this is the mentality. So my department chair at one time gave a seminar saying, don't worry about GMOs. Worry about the health risk of coffee, which is full of carcinogens. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was preposterous. I thought we as a college were promoting coffee as a health crop, as a good crop in Hawaii. And this department chair of plant science was saying coffee is a highly carcinogenic crop. Mm-hmm. And I have followed up and asked him for, can you provide me with the references to back up that information? And he has been unable to provide it. Mm-hmm. And the citation that he gives is a publication written by his mentor from UC Berkeley, which had that perspective on natural chemicals.
I'm sitting here thinking my professors would have been fired the first day by these people, because I recall a discussion. We were in a meeting or gathering at this environmental club or one of those, and someone says, well, what I do when I use chemicals on my veggies and growing in the garden, I may just make sure I wash it off, and in fact, I use some kind of soap or something, a mild. And the professor says, why don't we not depend on that and just don't use it and learn to grow the crops or the eggplants or grow whatever it is you're growing without chemicals? You won't have to buy. So that reminds me of, hey, maybe it's to set the stage where we need a dependency now. Is ring spot genetically modified papaya the only answer to the ring spot itself? Or did you have or develop or observe other techniques or farming that would have prevented that or reduced it in its presence?
So with organic farming, when you're looking at pests and diseases, you try to look at the root cause mm-hmm. of the problem. So it's always easy to look for a Band-Aid solution. I'm going to have this medicine and everything's going to be okay, but it's healthier to look at the root cause. Why are you having this disease? Why are you having these outbreaks? And if you look at the root cause with the papaya, it's because you're having unhealthy cropping systems. Mm-hmm. When you go and plant papaya on 400 acres monoculture, of course it's an open invitation for pests to come and attack your crop. If you follow ecological production methods through a mosaic of different plantings in the farm and small scale farming, then you may be able to grow a crop without mm-hmm. being attacked at the same level. So our position is that early on the university failed to look at alternative methods of production to deal with this kind of pest. And of course, the first solution would have been to quarantine the crop, to cut down all the papaya trees for a couple of years in Big Island, mm-hmm. and then a couple of years later to start with a with a clean crop after you eradicated the disease. Mm-hmm. But UH and the DOA failed to take this action, and they went for the easy answer for the Band-Aid response.
And that is the papaya ring spot, radiation or modified a GMO. Because one thing, well, that was for fruit fly. They were talking about irradiating the nothing to do with. But are they still irradiating papaya to be shipped out?
Yes, papaya still being irradiated as well as sweet potatoes for export.
Now, this article in the Cascadia Times says that you published 500 actual papers, professional papers, and you were still harassed. And
so going along with my performance in 2005, I encountered this level of friction, but I had a strong case, so my program went through. In 2010, I went through another post-tenure review, and in this time, both the department chair and the dean of the college found that my program was deficient. And I was outstanding because actually my productivity, my outputs had actually, in terms of publications, research, mm-hmm. and so on, had actually increased from the previous 5 years. Mm-hmm. And 5 years earlier, the dean had sent me a personal written note saying, "Hector, I would like to thank you for all the work that you've been doing in support of the college." So I increased my productivity 5 years later, and they are giving me negative reviews. Mm-hmm. So I asked for the university to establish an independent panel to look at my case in terms of my accomplishments. And a result of this panel, I got a memorandum from the chancellor saying, "You have no deficiencies in your program. Everything is fine." So from my perspective, these negative reviews were yet another retaliation mm-hmm. for my speaking out about GMOs. And Paul Coverstein uncovered in his article that mm-hmm. just months after they gave me a negative review, the monies from Monsanto started to come in from the college. Mm-hmm. $100,000 here, $500,000 there. And small monies were coming from different ways. They mm-hmm. even gave money to my former department to set up a website. So there's little pocket money here and mm-hmm. there to say, yeah, you guys are doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Now, this article in Cascadia Times, here's a quote: "It is odd that Hashimoto, which was the CTAR's dean at one time, dismissed the personal attacks against Valenzuela as, quote, within bounds of academic discourse, end quote. In public or in private emails, Valenzuela used saying that his superiors called him a jihadist, a liar, a worthless, and as in the email from Kaiser, a nut job. And those things ring with familiarity because I've seen this directed at me and other people. When you're doing a good job, it's just that they take the liberty to say and do anything. So what transpired there? What happened when?"
So it is a simplification of the thinking process mm-hmm. and the mentality is as simple as they put it. If you are anti-GMO, you are anti-science. If you are pro-GMO, you are pro-science. And of course, that's again totally preposterous.
It's illogical.
There's tons and tons of different questions out there in the scientific literature about the potential risks about crop biotechnology that are basically unknown. Mm-hmm. What happens when this DNA goes into the rivers? What happens when it goes into the soil? What happens when pesticides reach the monarch butterfly and or bees and other mm-hmm. products? So there's all kinds of scientific questions, and to simply try to erase you by saying what you're saying doesn't count because you are anti-science, anti-progress, again, it's the same keywords that are used by the tobacco industry, by the energy industry, but on a thinking process, it's totally preposterous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were worried about your comments, but it seems that, well, let me. This is another piece of the puzzle as to, and I'll draw. I've drawn this conclusion, not you. We've not discussed this, but we have the Department of Health, for example, who, for some reason, believe that it's their right to withhold documents that have been submitted well, not even submitted, where they've gone and conducted inspection, routine inspections of these facilities, Monsanto, Senegal, Dow, and the State Health Department, for some reason, or whatever directive that they receive, refused to release those documents, those inspection reports, and some of them are old, years, and I personally experienced that, they refused. So you have that interference, then you have the most of our, not most, a great many of our politicians are, have received donations from these GMO companies. So now the other portion of this puzzle as to why such momentum, in my opinion and observation, is that how did they have such control? And then they threaten at Kauai to sue, and now you're the other piece of this puzzle. Where in a University of Hawaii, this climate that you've endured, or does it still exist? Or has it improved?
In 2011, I was transferred from my old department of plant sciences to plant environmental protection, and the atmosphere somewhat improved. I don't have that fight on and on with the department chair. However, as part of my most recent post-tenure review, I was once again told that all my presentations and lectures about crop biotechnology did not count, which again I translated as saying, you can do all this on your private time, but not as a faculty member of the University of Hawaii. And I have a small frictions which with the department chair as well, who is again another very strong pro-GMO person. But overall, things have moved towards an improved, improved situation.
We had a caller, but I guess they were impatient. But you can call back again, 524-1080, if you'd like to. My guest is Dr. Hector Valenzuela, and we're talking about his experience at the University of Hawaii. He's a professor, tenured professor there. And
Doctor, I wanted to...
Go ahead.
I wanted to mention, you mentioned other agencies, and, and I should say that this is not only with the University of Hawaii, but perhaps with other institutions at the state level. And I think it also exists at this level of muscling people from speaking up. For example, the Department of Health is responsible to oversee issues that affect the health of the community, but its staff members of the Department of Health are muscled and not allowed to speak up. And again, I think because we're dealing with controversial issues, we should have an open deck where everybody, even staff members, should be allowed to participate in the discussion. We have several historical issues in the state, such as cane burning on Maui, such as pesticide residues from the plantations into nearby communities for many, many years. And there has been, as you indicated, a close association between these state agencies and the industry, the, the plantations, and it has been hush-hush, and there has been no independent studies to evaluate what has been the health impact of those of this long tradition of pollution on our nearby communities.
Now, I note that in some of these GMO companies in their own countries, or countries, Sweden prohibits the use of some of these herbicides or whatever they're doing. But is Hawaii a proving ground or to how to, because it seems they put everything in motion, everything that would be needed to get things done their way, they successfully done it. And that is, I believe, I'm in of the opinion that I believe that the university leaders that oversaw you have a greater interest in GMO, not just ideology, ideally, but simply some other motivation, even though it may be $500. But $500 with added with another 10 other grants makes a pretty good pocket change, you know, for a professor. You understand?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a money factor or not. I believe it's more the ideology in terms of their vision of where we're going, and I think it goes along with the power structure. The companies came to Hawaii because it has a good environment, it's within the United States, You're not crossing borders.
Mm-hmm.
But also it has the proper political environment where you can just grease the wheels of power and things start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently using 76% of the land that is used to grow crops in Hawaii, diversified crops in Hawaii. And they are
76%.
76% of the land that is used to grow diversified crops on Kauai, that's other than sugarcane and pineapple,
mm-hmm.
is being devoted to grow non-food seed crops. These fields in the past have laid, for the most part, fallow throughout the year. That means they're exposed to the wind, exposed to erosion, and they're applying over 80 different pesticide formulations year-round, mm-hmm. multiple formulation applications per day. And communities nearby those farms have been experiencing the day-to-day clouds of dust coming to their houses, to their communities.
Evidence of that is lawsuits that have been filed and successfully ruled on for the community.
Right. And most recently, a jury of our peers ruled or concluded that, in fact, Pioneer in Kauai was responsible for polluting the nearby town of Waimea.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, I believe, the first proof that their production practices are not sustainable. And again, if you look at what our professors, our university has been saying, what the DOA has been saying, is that these companies are following sustainable agriculture practices, the latest technologies. But this court ruling just concluded the totally opposite, that their production practices are not sustainable. They are downgrading the quality of the soil.
Is there any action taken by your professors or your CTAR school? The dean have said anything that would adversely affect Monsanto or the GMO companies? Have they taken any action equal or similar to what they've done toward you in the organic aspect? Have they spoken out against or have any strong opposition to anything?
Not really. For the past 10 to 15 years, an executive or a lobbyist of the seed industry has been a member of the board of advisor of the college. And the purpose of the board of advisor is to guide the programmatic and educational activities
mm-hmm.
Of the college. So from my perspective, they have an undue influence mm-hmm. about classroom instructional activities, extension activities, and research. And over the past 15 years, the administration has written editorials and commentaries, and most of them have been supportive of the seed industry.
Mm-hmm. So someone, I think, I can't recall the name right now, but actually worked for Monsanto, am I correct? The one that was elected to the board of CTAR. What was his name?
Perlak.
Perlak, yes.
Right.
Perlak. So he works for Monsanto, and the university invited or recruited or how did that relationship do? I was curious about that, and while hammering you down, beating you back, and ostracizing you, penalizing you, I should say,
right.
How did they? That's such a statement, that a complete commitment to that GMO, while they're telling you you can't speak any opposition or anything that would controvert.
Correct. So it is a board of advisors from the industry. So it is supposed to come from the industry,
mm-hmm.
but it should be representative of the different sectors of the industry. And the fact that they're selecting somebody from the pesticide industry, an industry that has a record of pollution, of breaking environmental laws in mm-hmm. many states, of creating mm-hmm. Superfund sites all over the world,
like Hawaii,
of whose
Agent Orange,
whose CEO mm-hmm. is being sought up after the law in India for the explosion in Bhopal,
mm-hmm.
To select one of these representatives to be a board of advisor, is this what we're trying to educate our students about producing chemicals and pollution and putting profit behind environmental quality. So the question was, did they select an organic farmer, somebody from the health industry to participate on this panel,
mm-hmm.
or was it composed of the power structure, members of the Farm Bureau, the big industry, the plantation industry, and so on?
Is there any representation on organic farmers or on that board with the idea?
I am not sure right now, but in the past, traditionally, I don't think there was a strong representation
But we know what they'll do to a professor that advocates for organic farming.
Correct. So we know the general thinking of where we're trying to go.
Wow. So I want to talk to you about other instances, other professors. So this isn't unique to you or this experience. And we can talk about it a little bit now and in the next hour. But are there other professors that have experience that you know of that is similarly situated or have they received the harassment or ostracization or anything?
Another question is this a systematic issue at the University of Hawaii system or Manoa? And anecdotally, there is a lot of talk about similar kind of environments in other schools where the administrator is a bully, creates a hostile environment, and so on. As recently as last semester, there was a discussion about creating a smoke-free campus at UH Manoa. And as part of the dialogue among faculty, I was very surprised to hear that some faculty were afraid to speak up about this issue just because they were afraid of retaliation. Some faculty, colleagues of mine from other schools, they may be in the arts department or women's studies department, they have been afraid to talk about crop biotechnology because they were afraid of were not tenured and so on. So there seems to be a climate of fear or not. I don't want to raise difficult issues because it may hurt me in the future. And this is totally opposite to what the university should be about. The university should stand for freedom, for the freedom to talk about any subjects. And I should say that other universities in the United States have a strong record of backing up academic freedom. The University of California system has been a strong tradition of defending academic freedom, and we saw it in the case of Tyrone Hayes at Berkeley.
Tyrone Hayes at Berkeley University.
Right. He was Tyrone Hayes was being attacked by the industry, by Syngenta, and internal documents showed how far the industry would go to target these scientists. But it was good that the UC system was defending them. Another professor came up with the archive of tobacco. And again, he was sued by industry in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And again, the San Francisco UC system in San Francisco defended this professor. So there are other universities that have a strong tradition of academic freedom. And I would wish that UH would come up and say we have the same level of our values.
So this suggests that we would hear greater explanations or objections to GMO if a certain segment of the population of educators were not fearful that they'd be retaliated. Imagine there's probably bound for plenty opposition or explanations or insight that we've yet to hear or give consideration, but they won't be public.
Right.
Because that's
so
sad.
Just as an example, I think this is very straightforward, but the department chair holds all all the strings in the department. So
Right. If
you want to play the game in terms of getting funding, getting allocations, and so on, you have to be on the good side of the department chair, especially if you have a climate like the one that my previous department chair had in our department. So in my college and in my department, I was the only one who would stand up and say, I have questions about this technology. It doesn't mean that I hate crop biotechnology. It just means I have questions about it.
Yeah.
But no other faculty was willing to stand up and say, yeah, you know, I have some questions about this or I have questions about that.
We'll talk about that. Let me call a good morning. You have a comment, a question? Hello? Yeah. This is an eye-opener because When you go at the politicians, that's understood. We tend to understand that a politician get his palms greased and, you know, okay, not that they mean to be criminal or sleazy or anything. It's just that they took and might give a little favor. But a university of free thinkers and progressive people and orchestrating such an act, because even if everything you say is false, I'm of the opinion to know in my 62 years that it is possible and what you're claiming is plausible. And I know about the GMO papaya and how, and there's some questions even getting the funding and with Senator Inouye and the party that has the seeds and most of the control. We don't know that party made money. out of that. But it was on university property and what have you. Well, was this university ever compensated, or were they just happy to be partnering up with an organization or an entity? You know?
So for the GMO papaya, I don't know if we got direct monies, but we did get a lot of federal funds to support this project, whether it was $10, $15, $20 million to convince the Japanese to accept our product, to develop the product, to provide free seed to our farmers. Mm-hmm. It was basically a subsidy. And again, the goal was to create, to make GMO papaya to be a poster child to the world.
Right.
So we threw all this money. Now, if you say, if we had spent $15 million to help organic farmers in the state, how far could have we gone if we had just the money otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
The creator of the GMO papaya, Dennis Gonsalves, mm-hmm. he has a patent on the technology GMO papaya. So while he was going around the world to promote this crop, while he was going to testimony throughout the state promoting this papaya, he didn't share the information that, yes, I have a patent, and down the road, I could make a lot of money once we sell this to Brazil, to Thailand, to other countries. So again, conflict of interest.
And his studies, what was done, the development, was right there in the same property that you were doing some of your work. Hold on.
Correct.
Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
A comment. Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you doing? We're down at the last minute.
Thank you, Hector. Is that your name, sir?
Hector, yes, Dr. Hector Valenzuela.
Okay, doctor. Mm-hmm. I've been watching your development for a number of years, and you've really done a lot for the farmer, the people that want to be informed. You know, if they listen to you, you know, they can get a lot of information. Like you said, you've been toward it for a number of years. I wish you luck. But 76% of our land, is that figure right, that is used for these GMO crops? Is that the right figure?
76% of the
land. Yeah,
of
the farmland, of the usable arable land is used for that stuff?
76% of the land that is used to grow diversified crops in the state consists...
Is used for seed
GMO production. And of that land, about 34,000 acres, they only use about 5 to 10% of that land. Most of the other land is just sitting there, fallow, exposed.
In other words, we could be definitely self-sufficient overnight. In reality, if they really wanted to do it in the state, vegetable-wise, and a large majority of the fruits too, wouldn't you say so?
And this is a question for the college, that we should be focusing on food production.
Okay, hey, we're going to have to come back, take a break here, required break, and we'll
okay,
be back.
Thank you, sir, for the
call back, Bob.
Thank you.
You're welcome to call back. All right, we'll be back shortly. This is the Carol Cox Show. We'll be right back.
Give them bomb bread. Oh, you give them bomb bread. Yeah, yeah.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. My guest here, and I'm pleased to have him and happy, excited, is Dr. Hector Valenzuela. He's been with us before talking about bees and different disappearances, organic foods and what have you. But we're talking about his experience there at the University of Hawaii. He's a tenured professor, and man, make me think twice when I put my trust in a university. But again, I'm going to pursue this a little further and contact some of the deans and what have you. But right now, we have someone else that's joining us. You've heard me quote some of the information from the Cascadia Times that was written, a very nice article. So if you were to go to Cascadia Times, and the actual title is The Silencing of Hector Valenzuela. And I have Mr. Paul Koberstein online here.
Good morning, Carol.
Hey,
how are you?
Good morning. How are you? Welcome aboard. And give us a little bit of information about yourself and an awesome article here. Give some great insight, if you could.
Well, thank you. I'm a reporter from Portland, Oregon, and I have an independent newspaper here in Portland. We've done a lot of things in Hawaii. Long time ago, we wrote a series of articles about the Westpac organization that controls fishing there, and mm-hmm. You probably know about that. And most recently, we wrote about the GMO issue in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, we did stories from Kauai. We found it was one of the most toxic environments in American agriculture just because of the chemicals they use. And now we see that the professor here at the University of Hawaii, Manoa, has been under a lot of pressure to keep quiet about his concerns about GMOs and the pesticides that are being used. And I have to say, he's got a good point. You know, it's not a voice we need to silence, and it's certainly not at a university.
Mm-hmm. And the other party working with you on this article was, don't want to not give credit, is Eliza?
Eliza Murphy, she's a journalist here in Oregon as well, and we traveled to Hawaii in early April and found a lot of things that were going on there at the university, also on the island of Maui, where mm-hmm. there's a lot of pollution from pesticides as well.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the things that you found, if you could, not in a nutshell, but just that more egregious or things more obvious have popped out at us that we should be concerned with, that we didn't know?
Well, in terms of the pollution, some of the things that are most visible on the island of Maui, you can see the monkey pod trees in the direction of the ag fields. They are losing their leaves. The defoliation of Maui is kind of an poorly discussed problem. And these, again, is all chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And Monsanto has a big 2,000-acre operation in the middle of the island near Kihei. And they're, whatever's going on there, they're certainly going to just add to the problem. And they have been involved with the University of Hawaii. And, you know, they gave money to the university. And at a time when Dr. Valenzuela was being silenced, putting two together here is that the university did not want this professor talking about his concerns at the same time they're cozying up to the company for money and other things.
Mm-hmm. Just for a little clarification, because I like to read more on it, the monkey pods, there's a direct link to this, the chemicals herbicide, and what study was that? Would we find that information?
That information is pretty hard to get. The state of Hawaii is supposed to investigate these kinds of environmental problems, and they've not done a very good job. They've ignored it. But mm-hmm. the monkey pod trees in the area of Paia are clearly the ones that are facing the ag fields where the chemicals are coming from are losing their leaves, and some of the organic farmers in that area have found some difficulty growing their plants because of the chemicals that, from this industry that are landing on the leaves.
Mm-hmm. And what, so that suggests a financial hardship or a disposition impact on the farmers. Have they quantified that or filed complaints?
We are in the beginning of investigating this story, and we don't really have all of the information we need to answer those types mm-hmm. of questions.
But mm-hmm.
what we do know is that there's been a very concerted effort by on the part of the state to look the other way. And so we don't have those answers yet.
And we probably would know a lot more if we were not seeing Dr. Valenzuela being ostracized or put in a box, Abu Ghraib type of. It's amazing. The only one of the few well-placed, educated voices we have is being sequestered.
I should add that there is a citizen, a grower in Maui, who has had problems with drift for several decades, and he has an extremely well-documented case of complaints of residues coming to his farm, of crop losses, and again, as Paul is indicating, of the DOA looking the other way. This is a decades-old study in which the problems were basically just swept under the rug.
Oh, my. So, Paul,
if I can add one thing.
Yeah, go ahead. Feel free. Go ahead.
Is that when you hear Dr. Valenzuela talk about what he's seen and witnessed on Maui, it's something that the university has taken steps to try to silence. And, you know, they've prevented him from conducting workshops and seminars and stuff on the island of Maui because of their lack of interest in having that information get out there. So he is now finally, after 6 years, free to discuss these issues, and you know the silencing of Hector Valenzuela is coming to an end.
Okay, well that's good news, and I hope that listeners out there will, if you're inclined, to call and offer some support or say to the university what gives here. We cannot have such a thing, especially in an educational institution.
I just wanted to
of higher learning, suppose.
Right. I just wanted to share that this is not something that I have spoken about. I've been here on the radio 2 times, and I give a lot of lectures around the state, and this is something that I really have not talked about,
mm-hmm.
Just because there's what I think are bigger issues, such as environmental and health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And these just came out of, thankfully, to the investigative work of Paul and Eliza. So I just want to say that I didn't come out running and screaming, but it was just I was responding to this mm-hmm. request for information. And
one of the things I wanted to ask you real quickly is that are you anti-GMO?
I'm not against the science. I support the science. I think mm-hmm. it's a great science, and in fact, it has taught us about the genetics and physiology of crops.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm against is about the open field environmental release of genetically modified crops that have never before existed in nature, without understanding what are their potential effects on the population and on the environment. And this is on top of our experience from similar mistakes that we have made in the past with biological organisms. In the past in Hawaii, we introduced all kinds of biological organisms to later on realize that we have created an environmental disasters. So I'm simply saying, let's not repeat the same mistakes that we have made in the past and follow the scientific process to ask all these questions.
Mm-hmm. Paul, you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Feel free to chime in. I don't have all the things that you've spent a lot of time in this. It's clear when I read this article, finally we get greater insight.
Well, thank you. I have one important point to make here, is that Hector is not an isolated case. He is one of many scientists who have found their academic freedom, their right to publish and do science on these issues, compromised by industry and academic institutions that want to censor and intimidate scientists who, again, who want to challenge these claims that genetically modified foods are proven safe to eat.
So when we approached the college with this issue, they have responded by saying, my former dean, Andy Hashimoto, and Bob Paul, my department chair, they said, we haven't prohibited Hector from talking in anything at all. He's free to talk about anything he wants. But this is just an email from 2010 from my department chair as part of his evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's from January 17, 2010, as part of my post-tenure review, and he wrote, I have not included in this evaluation any material related to your stated focus of the last 5 years to discuss the social, health, and environmental risks of crop biotechnology. This evaluation was based on your duties and responsibilities as a vegetable specialist. So that means biotech is not part of what you should be talking about.
Wow. Paul, the professors that you attempted to interview them and ask questions, were they, or some of the deans or some of the upper management that took some of these actions, how did they respond to you, or did they respond?
That's a good question. Many of them did not actually return my call or my email. One of them did, but most of them did not. The one who did was Dr. Robert Paul, who I believe was the former department chair where Hector taught.
Mm-hmm.
And he was willing to talk to me, but the other ones were not.
Wow. And didn't you send them emails and phone calls, or both? They just didn't respond.
I got radio silence from everybody but Dr. Paul.
I see. Hold on 1 second. Caller, go ahead. Thank you for waiting. You have a comment or question?
Hi, thanks. I'd like to ask Paul this. Did he hear anything about trees dying off on the West Coast over there, like he's talking about the monkey pod trees over here suffering?
You're talking about the trees on Maui?
There's barium, strontium, and aluminum oxide being chemtrailed. So I wonder how we can have organic farming in the first place. And in the second place, this just brings to attention the climate scientists, the agricultural scientists. They're all not acting like scientists. They're acting like agenda-driven people pushing the parade towards depopulation. That's the best I can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Has the doctor found any strontium, barium, or aluminum oxide out of proportion in any of the soils he studied in the last, let's say, year or two, or maybe over 20 years?
Well, let Paul answer your question about the trees if he would like to. I mean,
okay.
You give him a lot of questions. Go ahead, Paul.
One of the things we know about the monkey pod trees in Maui, and again, it's on the north side of the island near Paia, is that the portions of the trees that are facing the ag fields, and if part of the tree is behind a building and is shielded by a wall, that part of the tree does not lose its leaves. Only the part of the tree that's sticking over the adjacent houses and towards the ag field is losing its leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've heard Roundup is being used at harvest time to dry out the plants uniformly so they can harvest in a better and faster routine. So, yeah, sure. And then you said there was 80 different chemicals being experimented with. Was that just a round number, or that's an actual number? Because this is supposed to make things simpler, this agriculture of GMO.
I don't think I mentioned the 80 number.
No, I did, and it is over 80 different formulations that we learned that are being used by the seed industry in Kauai. And this is just part of their portfolio that they are using to grow seed crops in Hawaii, which is almost under sterile conditions. So as part of my concern about chemicals that are used in the islands, yes, I tend to focus more on the higher volume ones. In Kauai, we know that they're using over 18 tons of restricted use pesticides around the seed fields. And my concern is also about pesticides that are not being reported about, such as the large use of Roundup. both by the seed industry and also by the sugar cane plantations.
Paul, one thing I found quite interesting about your article, you mentioned the word atrazine. And some while back, and last night I was frantic trying to sort through my electronic filings, and I'm going to have to go back to another hard drive to find it. But atrazine was used in sugarcane here for an extended period of time, and they would apply it, and it would trigger an action in the plant to make it drop the leaves but create more sugar or be something. I can't recall exactly. But there was some concerns that it had gotten in the drinking water out at Haleiwa and those areas in the streams and in the groundwater. Have you heard anything about that? And also, it had, Doctor, some of the effects of it was about organs, or it would cause the organs to get larger or something. And I just can't remember all that was said in that document.
Well, I do know that the U.S. Geological Society has data, and they have actually shown that it not only gets in the water, but it gets into the fish tissue of fish that live in streams. And this is data that goes back a few years, and it consistently shows that. And those fish tissue studies, by the way, also show levels of DDT that still not being used, but it doesn't go away. It really persists in the environment for a very long time.
Well, what your article has done, it's caused a few things to get buttoned up in my mind, because I've been touching quite a few of these issues and not realizing that the same players were involved. You take, for example, when I saw your article, it reminded me of attempting to get the copy from the health department that spoke to the atrazine. It was difficult. And then there's a commission, a little water board that is involved, and I think Dole or someone else was on the board, and those people there were running interference and not to have this information processed and published so the health department would publish it and make it public.
Well, I think the state has a lot of data that shows how much atrazine is being used on the experimental GMO fields on the island of Kauai. And if you want to know more about atrazine, there was an excellent article in last year, 2014, about Dr. Tyrone Hayes at the University of California, Berkeley, who has studied atrazine for many years, and it has been intimidated and censored for his work by this industry. So he's one of the people who, like Dr. Valenzuela, who have paid a price for raising questions about these chemicals and the effects they have on the environment and human health.
So atrazine is one of those pesticides that you mentioned earlier that are allowed to be used in Hawaii and the United States, but not in the home country of Switzerland. So atrazine, lorspan, or chlorpyrifos are products that we're using but are not allowed to use by the parent company in Switzerland.
Well, gentlemen, what do you think at this point in time when the companies have threatened to sue the public? Many of our legislators and lawmakers refuse to take an action just on labeling, for example. What do you think would be the fair response right now, that both the state, the GMO companies, what should they give in to, or what immediate compromise, I'll use the term compromise, to do the right thing? Or are we behind the curve?
Well, can I take a stab at that?
Yeah.
I think for the first thing they should do is try to be much more, they can be much more open about what they're spraying, when they're spraying it, and, just basic honesty about what's going on, what they're doing. We know they're affecting human health and the environment, so people should be aware of what's going on. And information is the first step. Beyond that, I think they should submit to local regulation. The islands of Kauai and Maui have passed different measures to try to get these companies, to comply with the environment. So they should be willing to listen to local people and not try to fight them in courts and everywhere else with which frankly, with misinformation and untruths.
Well, it seems that, let's say if they were honest and we knew what they were using, then the next question would be, well, then we know the detrimental aspects of these things, or the side effects. Then how do we address that? Do we, you know, so it's, we need a state agency and a federal agency. One of the sickening things, it's almost nauseating, to when we talk to our state legislators, this is what they say. We'll defer to the feds and let them, just on labeling, we'll let the feds make that decision. But the feds, they don't want the Fed involved in many of the issues out here, right? But when it comes to GMO, let the Fed.
So in the state, we have the constitutional mandate to protect agricultural lands and to strive towards self-sufficiency. The powers that be in the state are saying, let's put our hands on our future on the hands of these large companies, which are essentially pesticide companies that are selling genetically modified crops, which include a package of a series of pesticides. On the other hand, the public all over the world is speaking very clearly. They mm-hmm. want wholesome food, free of pesticides or product or toxins, and the public wants locally produced food.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer for us is to go back to this global movement of food sovereignty or food justice,
mm-hmm.
and to promote small farmers, ecological mm-hmm. farming, take care of the land, and to do that, you honor the tradition of indigenous populations. That is something that they've been doing for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. Caller, good morning. Thank you for waiting. You have a comment, a question?
Yes. I'm listening very carefully to the toxicity of all these pesticides, chemical companies like Monsanto that goes way back. And what I'm really curious is to this. Even if genocide is their main protocol, depopulation of the earth, they know they have to have an antidote for this stuff. So as we listen and talk about this stuff, I think the concept of antidote needs to be talked about too. Not just the poison, but what's the antidote? Because if they have an antidote and everybody screams about the poison, the chemtrails, they got antidotes. I just intuitively know they have it. And I think that should be discussed also.
Well, yeah,
if you guys agree.
Well, I don't agree, but I mean, it's a free talk show here. You can offer your own opinions. But let me just finish with this, is that in order to build an antidote, or design or develop an antidote, you need to know what it is that you're being doped up with. So, believing what these gentlemen are saying, and I say, we don't have it because there's no full disclosure. That is one of the most critical parts of this public effort. We don't have disclosure. And we're having interference presenting itself by form of Department of Agriculture, the federal government, the state health department, legislators who's taken a few nickels to do whatever. So if there's such a thing, genocide, I don't want to belittle your comments, but yeah, right. All of those things go on a list, and we need to address them all. But,
I just put that out there, sir.
No problem. I appreciate it.
Yeah, the main concern is that as corporations, their view of the future is very narrow-minded. They're just looking at the next quarter, so they're looking for short-term profits. So I don't know if in their vision they're even considering what's going to happen many years down the road.
Well, if they killed everybody as a genocide, then they won't have anybody to sell it to. So they're in the business of making profit. That's maybe save the world's food bank, but I don't think so. But anyway, caller, go ahead. Thank you for waiting. You have a comment, a question?
Yes, thank you so much for having this show. It's long needed. I have a couple comments. The first one is that Monsanto was able to pass a law federally that they cannot be sued, and that just happened recently under this administration. So they're protected. The other thing is they were able to spend $32 million trying to not get things labeled GMO.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you're talking about is, we're going to find out what's in this stuff. If it's not being labeled, how can any research be done on what's in the food.
And
okay? That's an enormous stumbling block.
And they're quick to sue. They've already openly and publicly proclaimed they will sue. So imagine going in and buying something in a package and go back and say, now I'm going to sue. Where do you start?
Well, I don't know if you're aware. There's a wonderful book. I'm sorry, I don't know. It's printed in Hawaii. It's written in Hawaii. And they're actually using human DNA. Okay?
on what plants or what?
I'm sorry, I don't remember specifically. It's a wonderful book. I think it's food safety people are putting it out. It's a very scientifically written, free book on the state of food in Hawaii that's being prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not something that we can talk about. And getting an antidote to I've heard it's over 90 different chemicals. Well, the antidote to chemical ingestion is purity.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting that stuff out of the water, out of the soil. Stop using it.
Right, and keep getting it out and keeping it out.
This, you know, Hawaii is leading the country, this country, in pesticide use.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to us to do something. And if you look at all of the food organizations in Hawaii, Monsanto is on every board, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They own the university. They're running Hawaii.
Well, they except for Dr. Valenzuela.
Thank God. And other people. There's other people who are fighting as well.
Who are they? We'd like to get them on the show because we need to start talking.
I'm sorry. There's a doctor who works for the Department of Health, and he will only speak privately, not as an employee of the Department of Health. I think his name is Dr. Pang, P-A-N-G.
Okay. On Maui. Lauren Pang?
Yes, I think he's on Maui.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
Isn't that shameful, though, Paul? We have a climate of fear, and this is I can't bring myself to understand any part of this whole effort.
Well, it's called money. There's a tremendous amount of money being made, and you know, unfortunately, the pharmaceutical companies are connected to the pesticide companies. They're one and the same people.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and look to see who's making these chemicals that are supposed to save us from cancer and other diseases, these are the same people who are making the pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you don't want to say this is a genocidal, you know, conspiratorial movement, but you really kind of wonder how else do you frame this in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Do these people allow their own children to eat this food?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I doubt it very much. So, you know, here in Hawaii, we have apparently is thyroid cancer rates. And I just read a report by the CDC that said the health in Hawaii is great. Has low cancer rates, and yet I believe it was Queens Hospital that reported the high incidence of thyroid cancer.
So mm-hmm. one important point that was just made was
sure.
That GMOs is not only about the science, but it's also about the impact on communities. That's
mm-hmm.
that the social aspect. What is the impact of 4 or 5 corporations owning most of the seed supply, and what it's going to be the impact on the population and
mm-hmm.
on the health effects as well.
Like the caller earlier said about contrails, I'm not into the theory of contrails and all, but it did bring me back to a central point, and that is we have military activities. The way we handle our waste and the way we handle solid waste and hazardous waste in this state, we do it with EALs, and we can magically take a toxic product and in 5 minutes give the state health department 5 minutes and they've made it you can eat it by just changing the levels with the pencil. So you know, military activities and a lot of you know, we've used depleted uranium here on the ranges out there at Schofield and on and on and on. So where are we at in this game of health and whatever? We really can't point to any one particular thing because nobody's really doing the studies.
And I just wanted to mention in, with respect to antidotes that for us as individuals, antidotes means growing our own food, having a healthy lifestyle and a healthy diet, not consuming processed foods from GMO products. So personally, there's a lot of things that we can do individually to...
But the University of Hawaii say if you, you subscribe and ascribe to that and preach that, you better go hiding.
Right, you are anti-science, you're anti-progress.
Anyway, Paul, go ahead. Do you have a comment? Hold on, ma'am. Hold on, ma'am.
Okay,
Paul, go ahead.
I just wanted to kind of switch gears and talk more about Hector's work because I think it's really, really important for people to realize what he's up against as one professor at the university. And, you know, Hector could tell this story better than I, but when he first arrived at Manoa in the 1990s, he had an organic farm research study that went on for a few years. And so, Hector, could you tell us what happened? Why did that study end? How did the university put the kibosh on what you were doing?
We talked a little bit about this earlier, but I started the project in 1993, and my goal was how can we grow crops without relying on chemicals, on external chemicals, and I wanted to make this a long-term project for the university so that we could come many years later and determine how did the soil improve, the microbial activity, and so on, to share this information with growers. And this information is not only for organic farmers, it's useful for all farmers. Because even conventional farmers are looking for ways to grow crops in a healthier way. However, in 1999, the dean of my college just suddenly shut my program off and said, well, we're going to allow another group to take care of this land. So, as indicated earlier, it's almost like they took away my laboratory. They cut my program on the knees, and I was not able to professionally pursue this type of project. At the same time, GMOs were becoming a big agenda in the college. Well, the GMO papaya, GMO anthurios were coming up. So from my perspective, the college had a one-eye vision towards GMOs, and somebody doing research was not a very important thing for them, and they didn't see it as something that they needed to protect and preserve.
So what I find interesting is that the entire time has been really a cheerleader for the GMO industry and has, you know, looked kind of some of this known about organic farming. They even have a rap song praising GMO on their website. It's embarrassing, really, what the university has been doing to stick its neck out for this one industry at the expense of organic farming. And one thing that happened over the last 15 years, the university has been trying to duplicate its success with papaya with, I think Hector told me, 14 or 15 other organic GMO fruits and vegetables, as well as fish.
Mm-hmm. Tilapia, right?
Tilapia and shrimp. Uh-huh. So none of these other experiments turned out well. And I'm wondering, Hector, if you could elaborate on that. What happened? Why did everything the university did fail except for the papaya?
So the university was getting a large level of funding from the federal government to help diversify agriculture in the state, to help farmers in the state. However, a lot of those research monies were diverted to fund GM projects. And I call them bridges to nowhere. It was with GMO lettuce, GMO cabbage, salvia, tomato. And in essence, it's because the unpredictability of GMOs. It's almost like a random insertion of a foreign DNA, and you're hoping that something happens. And most of those projects, I think, were unsuccessful. They had side effects, or it just didn't work out. I believe the GMO papaya is actually ready to go. They are ready to release it into the environment, but the university has found a large level of public opposition. So I think they haven't seen it propitious to release it at this time. So basically, my thinking is that they could have used all of that research money and energy to develop new organic systems for Hawaii.
Now, you said that, Paul, in your article here, I had to chuckle and then asked to say that this is serious. That was after they shut you down in 98, Hector, they then took the plots away and gave it to a Japanese religious group?
Correct.
What's that all about? Were they into farming? Were they into what?
They were into farming, but they had assisted me from the beginning. But they had agreed to provide voluntary labor to assist me.
Mm-hmm.
They were cozying up with the department of head chair and with the university, and they wanted to go in their own direction. So the dean of the college at that time said, "Well, we're just going to allow them to do what they want, and you won't have any more responsibilities."
And were they still following the line of organics, or were they then incorporating GMOs, or what was it that was so special about them that differentiate them from you?
Well, they just had a lot of political connections, so they were taking the Department of Agriculture chairman for trips to Japan, treating him to dining and wining.
And who's this dean at that time? Laughlin?
Chuck Laughlin. Right. But again, my perspective is the college didn't envision what I had, which mm-hmm. is develop a research on organic farming. They don't saw it as a high priority. And if they want to help a religious group, go ahead and do it, because mm-hmm. if they have political connections.
Paul, if you could, give your links to your, because this is a must-read item. I mean, we've all been craving for information, and we're wishing, and well, the locals won't do anything, the newspapers won't do anything. I applaud KGMB, or Hawaii News Now. I brought it to their attention. They immediately, you sold them, Paul. They were excited to see that article, and they went and did an article. I don't know if you saw that piece.
I did. That was great. I want to add one thing to what Hector said. You know, when he started his organic farming research, it was not just an experiment just to fiddle around with stuff. Hawaii at that time and still uses a huge amount of pesticides, as one of your callers pointed out. And there was a state report that came out that said they use 10 times the national average. So it's not like a little more, it's a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what Hector was trying to do was figure out how to grow organic crops on an island in the South Pacific that has, I think he said it was the largest or the first ever study of its kind. And so he needs to be, they should have awarded him, they should have expanded his project, instead they cut him.
What is your contact for this article, or Cascadia Times, or can you give the email or a link to your website?
Yes, it's very simple. TIMES. That's times.org. And you hit that or Google it, and it'll come right up.
Times.org, and that's Cascadia Times. Okay.
That's correct.
And that is absolutely awesome. Ma'am, go ahead. You started and we interfered with your comment. Can you hold 1 second, though?
Sure.
And caller, thank you for waiting. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, I'll try to be quick. I heard the doctor say it's a good science. I'm not sure what he means by that. Like anthrax weaponization is a good science or something. Just don't do it outdoors. It's a good science. Okay. So we at least understand it's unsustainable, especially up there in Kauai. And we're pointing towards agricultural collapse from GMO and possibly weather modification. So I was wondering, what is the point of no return? I think we're at that. And it's not about the money to these people that are trying to be satanic in our government and in this world. It's about control and pain and sacrifice.
Okay.
Not the money, doctor.
All right. Well, thank you, Curtis. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Ma'am, go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much. I would like to point everybody to tests done in Europe on biodynamic farming. This has been done for decades. And there's even been some testing of farms that are near nuclear power plants that have a lower amounts of radiation in mm-hmm. the soil than their neighbors that are not biodynamic.
Okay.
So this has been going on for decades, and it's a wonderful way to replenish and
and renew the soil in a very, very natural way.
Well, I appreciate that, but, you know, I don't mean to be rude, but right now we have something under the hat that we've possibly gain a foothold and some control and hold these people accountable. So I'd like to really pay attention to the situation.
I'm just referring to organic testing, but
we have some action that we should be taking on behalf
of Dr.
Valenzuela. So I don't want to water that down, and not to be insulting or dismissing. It's just that sometimes when we have something in hand, I like to deal with that.
If he's being blocked from doing testing on organics, I'm just saying there has been decades of testing in Europe that he can rely upon and look at.
But again, the institutional behavior is what we're speaking to today within our confines, within our boundaries, how it affect us immediately rather than, you know, globally. Just to simplify it, we caught them with their hands in the cookie jar, so to speak, as far as I'm concerned, and misbehaving. And now maybe it explains why we don't get labeling. Maybe it explains why we don't have alternative being promoted when we have the people that represent this and has a better understanding or being ostracized and cut off at the knees. So I'd like to contain it in that for right in this vein. But if you'd like to, I would invite you back. You can call in or come in, and we can have another talk about all that, because it's never bad to have more information.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
So you're welcome. Go ahead. You have any other comment regarding this particular?
The only thing would be about the chemtrails. There was testing of the hair of children on Kauai that showed very high levels of aluminum. So that relates to possibly chemtrailing, so it may not be a myth after all.
Or could it be that they were mom putting underarm deodorant under their arms? You know, I mean, these are the kinds of things I don't like, go chasing the rabbit down the hole. I'd like to see. We got one here. We got something can make a change if we educate everybody as to what an educational institution did or is doing. To Dr. Valenzuela and others might give us an answer to give us some way of controlling this.
You are the educational movement.
Uh-huh.
You know, AM radio, the people, the grassroots, you are the ones doing, you are the one who's educating the world, and this is really, really important.
Well, give me a call back. If you got a pencil, 782-6627, and I'd be happy to. I think all of that, I would love to talk about it, and not dismissing you, but I'm going to answer the other.
Can I have that number again?
782-6627.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Aloha.
Aloha.
Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Hello?
Yes. Comment or question real quick.
Yeah. I have two things. One is basically right here in Hawaii. With all the excavation that the rail is doing, and they're stockpiling all of this excavation all over the place. Is there any test?
Hello?
Yes.
Am I on here?
Yeah, go ahead. I disconnected the caller. Call the call back again. Go ahead, Paul, if you would. Somehow we got a jammed up phone here. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I hear a lot is that the people who are questioning GMOs are compared to the climate deniers, and I just want to talk about that for a moment.
Okay.
They are conflating a lot of different things when they do that. I've seen data that shows about the same number of scientists that question climate change also question or also support GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start talking about GMOs and add some information, pesticides and all that, the support goes way down. And all of a sudden, people, you know, when they get more information, begin to question these things. And
mm-hmm.
Monsanto controls a lot of the studies that are done. But like I say, there's no proof that there are any health effects. But Monsanto does a really good job of making sure they quash studies that might show a different point of view, another result. And there's been some studies recently that have shown that some of Monsanto's patented genetic engineering technologies are actually a hazard, a potential hazard to health.
Mm-hmm.
There's one called RNA interference, and I don't want to get too technical on you, but it deals with basically inserting some kind of computer code, like a computer code into the plant, into our food, and when the insect eats it, it dies. But when people eat it, it can mess with our body, our liver, and it can some studies have shown lead to heart attack, increased risk of heart attack.
And I think that's why the caller earlier talked about genocide. And I understand the implications, and that is one of the cases that it could be if someone was inclined, if it got into the wrong hands, or if they could insert those codes. I understood what they were alluding to, but not specifically. But
no, let me just, you know, if your listeners are skeptical of what I'm telling you is true. They can look up a study done by a Chinese researcher called Zhang, Z-H-A-N-G. Just Google that. You'll get that information.
Z as in zebra?
Yes.
Z-H-A-N-G, Zhang.
And that study has been confirmed by half a dozen studies in the last year done by universities like Baylor and University of South Carolina.
Right. The caller call, and I disconnect you by accident. You feel free to give you about 2 minutes to call in, and don't want to shut you off there. But we apologize for that. Dr. Valenzuela?
I just wanted to indicate that all the government institutions that we're talking about, the university, Department of Ag, Department of Health, they are public institutions. They belong to the public. Mm-hmm. The university belongs to the public, belongs to the undergraduate students. So if the university is going in the wrong direction, it's almost on their own or our own responsibility, and we as a public have the power to say, this is wrong. You should be acting on behalf of the public, in behalf of the environment, and the path that you're following right now is not the proper one, because it's our university. So it's not them, it's us. So I just wanted to encourage people to become involved in the democratic process, because that's what we have in Hawaii.
Yeah, you know, well, that's why I believe that I didn't know anything, and I'm always watching, didn't know that this was going on with you. And that's a great statement on the part of UH and this movement, this GMO movement, as to why they're able to suppress so much. And if they're whacking at you and threatening the lawsuits and buying off the politicians, where are we left?
And the problem is that with the UH being a cheerleader of the industry, with having representatives as its board of advisors, they have helped to legitimize the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the media, this is what the politicians, they think everything's fine with GMOs because they have been legitimized by the university system.
Right.
And the university, on the other hand, has not allowed dissenting voices from challenging that position. So it's important that everybody has an open voice and a discussion so that we can actually
So the public goes to ask and recruit the assistance and understanding of the legislators to introduce a bill, but then I've heard this. Well, what does UH think about that? But the professors at UH, they are applauding this. What's your expertise, Cox? Eating.
Correct.
And that's it.
Correct. And we have young professors that may have questions about it, but of course they have seen my situation, said they're not going to speak up and say, no, this is wrong.
Paul?
Yeah.
You have a comment? We're coming down to the last 5 minutes, so feel free to say.
I want to point to a couple things that Hector shared with me. There were colleagues of his who would send him emails thanking him for his balance. Viewpoints and you know, speaking his mind, but they admitted they were afraid to talk because, you know, there could be repercussions for them. And these guys all have families, and you know, they have to watch out for that. Hector has been very brave, and I want to applaud him for stepping out. Hector, if I can ask one question, could you talk about the response from your colleagues, and you've been ostracized by some or many of your friends just for speaking out. How has that impacted your life?
I don't know if that's a little difficult. One of the things that are harder to document is that you are kind of ostracized. It's almost like a high school atmosphere when you become ostracized in the on the institutional level, and your friends that used to talk to you don't speak to you anymore, and people kind of ignore you. You're left in a bubble. So I'm somewhat of a lone wolf and a loner, so I'm able to survive and to keep on fighting. But that's not what it's supposed to be. Hawaii, UH used to be an ohana, a family. Everybody's working together, and it used to be like a family. But you're losing that perspective once you pit one faculty against another. An atmosphere of fear that's not conducive to collegiality, to open discourse and discussion, and even to accept people that may not agree with your ideas, but they are still one member of your faculty.
Caller, thank you. Real quick, you have a comment or question?
What's up, Carol Cox?
Fine. Everything's fine. You have a comment or question?
Not really. I was calling to say hello.
Okay. Go ahead. Did you finish your comment?
So, yeah, it has been difficult, and I imagine it will be a lot tougher on other specialists. But again, the dynamics within the system of ostracizing faculty. And this is also a matter of leadership and vision in terms of administrators. Administrators are the ones that are supposed to create an atmosphere of positivity. So when the department chair was telling me, you cannot speak out, you cannot do this, and this climate of hostility, I saw it as this coming from upper administration because they knew it was happening and they were not doing anything about it. Mm-hmm. And this went for years and years. I recorded this information. I shared it with the department dean, with the chancellor of the university,
mm-hmm.
and nothing occurred until I raised a case of academic freedom with the university, and they basically conducted a whitewash investigation. As committee members, they chose faculty members that have administrative duties, mm-hmm. so they were pretty much policing themselves. Like the fox looking after the hen house. Mm-hmm. So they, of course, concluded there was no problem with academic freedom.
And there was a reference to, Paul, you raised it in your article, about him being from Guatemala. What was that comment? And I think we're down to the last few seconds. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that was just a case, an example of the hostility that I was facing. And I was working on the field with the guys, with the crew in the farm, and I had a pretty hostile encounter with my department chair, and as a conclusion of that encounter, he called my country of origin to be worthless.
Worthless.
So I,
Guatemala is worthless.
Right. So I felt that pretty insulted. But the general pattern over the years was the same. When he would walk into a room, he wouldn't recognize my presence. He would say hi to everybody except me and my assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a pattern of hostility. And
Well, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Hector Valenzuela of University of Hawaii, and Mr. Paul Kulberstein from Cascadia Times. Paul, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk, exchange some information. All right?
Yes, we should definitely do that. I have some questions for you, but thank you for the opportunity, and it's been great talking to you and Dr. Valenzuela on your show.
Thank you, and please give me a call. Aloha.
Hello?
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.